Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Hello, Adrian. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I am so excited to have this conversation with you, because we're going to be talking about DID, dissociative identity disorder. And a lot of people, including myself, were not very familiar with the term dissociation associated with trauma, but dissociative identity disorder, people say, isn't that multiple personality? Wasn't that used to be called multiple personality disorders? And then there's all kinds of thoughts on that. In the past, I have had some professionals come on, and I realized after following you for a while, I was so incredibly touched just by your life and your experience, and then your professional experience as well as your personal experience, because you are a psychologist. I was just like, imagine having someone with the lived experience explain to us what it is so that we can hear it from the mouth of, you know, the person who has experienced it, who understands it, and who's involved in educating and supporting those who are experiencing DIDs. Welcome. I hope that you know how much we appreciate you being here, and we're open to hearing and to learning.
Yeah. So, well, one, again, thanks for having me. I should note that this is, for other people who are tuning in, this is my kind of first reemergence after a very challenging and difficult year, and stepping back out and using my voice. It has not been easy to use my voice as somebody that lives with DID, and I am a professional. And I think about that a lot, because there's a lot of people living with DID that attempt to speak out and they're shut down, or they're ridiculed, or they're minimized. Whether it's fortunately or unfortunately that I have these credentials that give me a little bit more credibility to where I can be heard. But I certainly don't want to convey the message that this is easy for me to do, because it's not. Anytime those of us living with DID share anything, we risk exposure and exploitation. It can be a lot for our parts that we live with. So anything that I say yes to has to feel in alignment and right and intuitive. I've been approached by producers and things like that, and then I get further along and then realize there's some undertones of exploitation and it's not safe to proceed. So I'm grateful to be here to have the conversation, and I'll weigh in from it from both sides. To be honest, what I think people need to know is, though I'm a psychologist and I've worked in mental health for over 23 years, I didn't even know exactly what I was dealing with until I was diagnosed with it. So I can connect with the professionals that feel lost and overwhelmed when they don't know what it is or how to treat it, because I myself certainly was not trained appropriately on DID and didn't appropriately know how to treat it until I was diagnosed with it and then had to figure out a bunch of things for myself. I do empathize with the clinicians who are genuinely trying to make a difference and make an impact to treat a condition that they're not getting very much training on. And then I have some thoughts on the therapists that think they're overqualified and actually are doing harm. So we'll get into that a little bit. But yes, so DID, dissociative identity disorder, it used to be referred to as multiple personality disorder. That was changed in 1994 by the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. However, the whole manual of mental disorders does still not accurately capture what dissociative identity disorder is. So I'll give the bite-sized version, because the science and all that can be a lot for people to digest, and it can be somewhat boring in terms of going through all of that. But basically, people with DID have experienced some level of extreme trauma, often that occurs before the age of 9, and it's ongoing and pervasive. The people with DID are not people that have experienced what might be considered a single incident trauma, meaning there may have been, there are people that live with PTSD that maybe have had a single incident trauma, one occurrence of maybe some kind of abuse that has happened, and then it led to the development of PTSD. With DID, we're talking about ongoing, pervasive, hideous, grotesque, horrific trauma. In my case, being a trafficking survivor and having experienced ritual abuse as part of that. It's hard because there's a lot of people that don't believe in the existence of DID because of Hollywood's misrepresentation of multiple personality disorder in the media, and then some clinicians denying the fact that DID exists. But basically what happens is you have a human that experiences extreme trauma. The brain does a brilliant thing of developing what's called parts or alters. Those are the identities that exist within a DID system, and they are needed to develop to block out the reality of the trauma that's happening. And to break that down even further, those parts or those alters are there for a reason. They needed to come in to help the human survive the horrific trauma that was happening. So the brain sort of does a dissociative response where it segments off, and this part develops, and it can have its own thoughts, attitudes, feelings, behaviors, ages, genders, and characteristics, all living within one. And many people with DID are not aware that they're living with DID until they're diagnosed. And the average age of diagnosis is about 37. So people will go through their lives. They'll go through treatment. I'm just trying to shut off a little buzzy thing so it doesn't go off during our talk. People will go through their lives dealing with a lot of chronic stress, maybe some crises. Maybe they've turned to therapists, medication. They're not getting any relief. Nobody knows what's happening. They're being misdiagnosed with a personality disorder or a psychotic disorder, when really it's been DID. And because there's still that controversy of whether this disorder is real or not, some clinicians are missing it completely because they choose not to believe in it. Well, when you choose not to believe in it, or you're saying that you treat trauma but you don't believe in DID, you're doing the community a disservice.
Yeah,
of course.
How common, I don't know if you have a number or an idea, but how common would you say, because I've heard, and I knew it wasn't true when I heard a therapist say this, but I heard a therapist say it's very rare. And I was going,
Right. It's not rare. It's estimated that it's about 1 in 3 people live with DID, but we don't have accurate numbers because, again, people are being misdiagnosed. And some of us that live with it don't admit to it on, you know, certain medical forms or whatever, because there's a risk there as well. So we don't have accurate numbers, but we suspect that those numbers are actually much higher than what's reported. They say that the numbers are likely higher than that of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. And again, when people are denying the fact that things like extreme abuse and ritual abuse happen, then they're going to deny the fact that DID exists. So that's this whole cycle. But no, it is not a rare, and there's far more people living with DID than is reported in the research.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it makes so much sense when you, the way you explained it about how when something horrific, like too much to handle, happens, and yeah, the brain and the body does dissociate, we understand that, to sort of remove ourselves from it. But then with DID, a part comes in and takes over and responds, and that becomes a personality that begins to start taking over in certain situations.
Yeah, with the new language is identity. We refer to it identity versus personality so that we're not confusing people, because DID is not a personality disorder. However, and again, all people with DID are going to use their own language to refer to themselves and their parts or their alters. I've used parts because that's kind of what people were using, but I actually prefer alters, and I actually prefer multiple personalities. But that can make some people living with DID upset, but that's where I sit, because people don't know what DID is, but they've heard of multiple personalities. So if we can clarify what multiple personalities actually is, I think it can help people, because the general public doesn't know. You say DID, they're like, well, okay, who cares? Like, what is DID? Well, if I say, well, it used to be called multiple personalities, then people have an image in their mind. They've seen some stupid Hollywood movie that's exploited our condition. There's an opportunity for education there, right? So yeah, it's a multi-layered situation, right? We've got horrific trauma. We have this brilliant condition that can be very challenging to live with. We have the general public and the providers that don't understand. It's really quite a mess. And we're only just now starting to make some traction with media and things like that. And the media can be very dangerous, but we all know we also have a greater likelihood to shift the narrative if it's the right media. So like I've done LA Times and USA Today, both of those articles did our community some level of justice, but not all are like that. There was a recent one in the New York Times that, again, made people believe that we're people that are dangerous or have personality disorders. And so it's hard to know what to say yes to, but it's important that we keep moving the needle to help break down this very large stigma that was present well before I was even born.
Yes. So what's the story with you? When did you find out that you were, at what age did you find out that you were multiple?
Yes, it's been quite a journey. Well, I always knew there was something off with me, and I was always on this quest to figure it out. And I thought when I was young that I must, because I studied psychology very early. And I remember in high school going, oh my God, I think I might have a personality disorder. Like, what is wrong with me? Or maybe it's that I'm a child of an alcoholic, that I have all these problems, and I was labeled oppositional and out of control and a bad kid and fresh, and I wasn't doing good in school. And I was just sort of a lost soul, but I was always on a quest to figure out, like, what is wrong with me? But I would have never pegged it as being multiple, because even then, what I knew as multiple wasn't what I was living, right? What the Hollywood stigma was like, oh, well, that's not me. So it's been a very long journey. But when I started studying more psychology, and then I wanted to be a therapist and have my own practice, I had a great supervisor who encouraged all of his clinicians to seek out their own therapy. And I wanted to be the best at everything. So I wanted to enter my own therapy and I wanted to do EMDR. And it was in 2012 where I first sought out some trauma-based therapy. And I went in and I did some EMDR, and she discovered a sexual assault that happened when I was in college. And then that opened up all of this stuff that I didn't know what I was dealing with. And she had mentioned DID. And I must have known somewhere in all of my parts that that was it. But I was like, screw this therapist. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I do not live with this. I'm going to get back to doing what I'm going to do. And sought out another trauma therapist, and the DID diagnosis was missed completely. Until I had an unraveling in 2016, there was an incident that occurred where I was stalked by a patient's partner. He wasn't trying to stalk me. He was trying to get to his partner, which triggered a lot of a fear-based response in me. And then there was a complete unraveling where my parts, again, wasn't aware that I had parts, but I was having what I thought was unusual thinking, some paranoid thoughts that my father was coming to get me. I didn't know what was happening. I was decompensating at home. The partner I was with at the time was observing like a younger part of me, like in the corner crying. I couldn't take care of myself. I basically had a complete breakdown. But what we do now know, now we would call that a DID system breakdown. But what we know now is that breakdown needed to happen in order for me to discover my parts. But unfortunately, I had to be hospitalized. There was a lot of suicidality, some very dangerous suicidality, and then residential treatment. And still, providers are not picking it up. So I'm getting labeled with major depressive disorder with psychotic features. I'm getting labeled as oppositional in the inpatient hospital because they violated my confidentiality. And they're like, oh, there's a psychologist on the unit. And I'm like, can we not tell people that I'm a psychologist, please? I have some level of privacy. I was so concerned about my career because I was a high functioning professional in Scottsdale with my private practice. And I thought, I can't have this. I can't be in the hospital. I had so much shame because I didn't know what was happening to me. And I had a psychiatrist in residential tell me, Adrian, you will get your life back. You're going to figure this out. You're not going to have to be on medication forever. Just take these meds while you're here. Let's see if we can restore some of this depression, and you'll get back to your practice and you'll do all the things. And for whatever reason, I believed him, even though we still didn't know what I was dealing with. So I went through this horrific experience where I didn't believe that I had psychosis, but I still couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. The psychiatrist I was working with in Arizona said, I promise you, you're not going to have to take this medication for very long. Please just take it for a few months after your hospitalization. We'll reevaluate and see where things are. My mom and I had been disconnected, and we got reconnected, and then she was diagnosed with cancer. And she was going to die. And my mom died within 4 months of her pancreatic cancer diagnosis. And I started drinking more heavily to cope with the level of grief that I didn't know what was happening. My marriage at that time was falling apart. I was having to rebuild my practice after being sick. My mom dies. I'm drinking a lot of wine. And my therapist at the time and I decided, like, I'm going to take a break from alcohol. So I take a break from alcohol, but then I start getting flooded with all kinds of child abuse stuff. And then different parts start showing up in her office. Different parts start showing up at home, communicating with my husband at the time. And then together, the three of us put it together that I was living with DID between what he was observing, between what was happening in the therapy office, and then what I was experiencing. So it was about 2018. So it's been a long journey from 2012 when I was first told and quit that therapist, was focused on really building my career at that time. Then my mom getting the hospitalization, decompensating there, getting really sick, my mom dying, and then having to address the issues with alcohol. And I'll tell you, though, all of that, which was horrific, and I needed my own healing and therapy just around the inappropriateness of the inpatient level of care, the lack of respect I was provided with, all of that unraveling needed to happen in order for me to get to where I am today. But it was absolute hell going through all of that and trying to figure out what is wrong with me. This psychotic disorder does not fit. I'm a psychologist. I do not have psychosis. You know, what is happening? And when I finally was able to get to a place of having some communication with my parts, I was like, I remember I had a phone call with my therapist at the time, and I had been watching The Many Sides of Jane. So Many Sides of Jane is about a woman named Jane Hart who did one season on A&E about living with DID. And I remember watching The Many Sides of Jane, and my jaw just dropped. And I was like, my God, what Jane is living with behind the scenes, what she's willing to share is what I'm dealing with. And I could hear parts talking. So I was talking to my therapist at the time going, I have some communication with my parts. I'm watching this. I'm connecting with it. And that was the first level of some level of acceptance that like, okay, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. And they started to share their names and things. And I remember turning to my husband at the time and saying, my God, like, I think I really do live with this. I have, you know, these voices that are telling me things. They have names or, you know, sharing all this stuff. And I don't want to talk too much about my ex-husband because there's a lot of stuff there. But at first it was like, well, I'm not referring to them as their names. Like, if you live with this, fine, like, we'll figure it out. But like, I'm not doing that. And I remember I just like melted down with sadness on the inside because I could hear that the parts were really upset that they weren't going to be acknowledged or accepted. And so I was like, well, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do here because I got to deal with this or I'm going to die. Like, that's the reality. If you live with DID and you don't deal with it, you're going to end up either with some severe addiction or suicide or some other kind of chaotic death because it's so much. Like, you can't run from it. You got to face it. And it's really difficult to deal with because what most people don't see is they see me as Adrian. They see me as functioning one way and they have all these expectations about what I should and shouldn't be, especially as a psychologist. And now here I am in the world saying, well, there's a lot of me, you know, there's more than 20 of me and they all show up at different times. They have their own names and ages, styles of dress, different music tastes, people that they prefer. Some of my friends they don't like. I mean, it's a whole thing and way of living. And it wasn't until I really found the DID community where I could start to normalize like, okay, if this is what life is like with DID, then there are ways to manage it and ways to live with it. And I may not be accepted by the world and other people in my life might not get it, but people with DID will get it. And that's where I belong.
I can't imagine what it must be like to meet other people who know exactly what you're talking about, having, you know, different identities. I forget what you said. If you don't like it being called identities, I want to be very respectful.
No, identities is perfect.
You know, but them getting it because they're having it too. And so I just can't imagine what that might be like when the whole world is. There's just so many layers of trauma just in this whole thing that you talked about. And I am familiar because I do have a friend who was hospitalized and she was treated so poorly. She has DID. And the disrespect, you mentioned that. When what you need is tenderness and acceptance and love and calm and welcome. And I can't even, my heart to you.
Yeah, there's so many issues with inpatient hospitalization nationwide. And, you know, the parts and I have always talked about like, oh, if we could do something to change the treatment protocols in inpatient hospitals, because I actually used to work in one when I was in graduate school. So I know what they're like. Man, we could really change the face of mental health for those people that need to go in for safety reasons. It doesn't have to be a shaming thing. So many people need to go to the hospital for safety reasons and they're not going because of the poor treatment. And so they're having to manage a lot on their own or keep themselves safe. So it's been a long journey to arrive at 2024 with the level of acceptance that I have for DID. And actually, Jamie Pollock, who's the founder of An Infinite Mind, who you might want to link in your if you do like a resource thing, An Infinite Mind is the leading organization on DID. And what she said sometimes is after you sort of get that formal diagnosis, when it's really validated for you, because we all try to deny it. Like, who wants DID? Nobody wants it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to live with. But she said sometimes it gets harder after it because your parts start coming forward. You start learning about them. It's more to manage. You've got the world to think about in terms of like your family and your friends. And it has been harder since that initial diagnosis in 2018. And anytime I try to pretend like I don't live with DID, I don't do it purposely, but it catches up to you. You have to really tend to your being in order to live with this.
So I'm curious about when you said the parts showed up and started to speak to you. And what are they sharing with you? Are they sharing with you their experiences of the past? Are they experiencing their fears today? What?
Yeah, well, really both. So I had some younger parts that would communicate with me through art and writing. Sometimes I would find disturbing things, you know, trauma memories and things that feel so distant from me. You know, I remember I had my 13-year-old part would share all of this horrific stuff around my dad. And at first I was like, what are you even telling me? Like, I don't want to believe any of this. A lot of it would show up in therapy, like in the art, or I did have a therapist, unfortunately, push for a part to disclose, and then things escalated because you never want to, a person living with DID should never disclose anything without consent of their parts as much as they can get it. So even to do podcasts or media related things, I have to check in with all parts. Where are we at? Are you feeling like you can do this? Does this make sense today? Or like, as you and I talked about before we scheduled this podcast, like what I need in terms of like emotional safety. I need to make sure my stuff's not going to be all chopped up and my words are going to be, you know, used against me because there's just so much risk for us there. But yeah, they would communicate through writing, journals on my phone and my notepad. I mean, I have thousands of notes from when I first started the journey. Sometimes they would talk about silly things and other times it would be horrific trauma things. And then different parts have access to other parts before I can get there. And it's hard. Like it sounds like when I talk about it out loud, I'm like, it does sound unusual. Right. Like I'm one human being with all of these other identities inside me that come out and take control of my life and my body. I get why most people struggle to believe in its existence, especially when they're comparing it to something in Hollywood where you might be expecting to see a dramatic display of a change of outfit when really it's real subtle. It's eye movements, it's facial grimaces, it's mannerisms. Like I have a part that swears like a truck driver. It may or may not show up here today. You know, it's just one of those things where you can't see it. So people have a hard time grasping the reality that exists because they can't see it. They look at me, they see Adrian. They don't see, you know, my 17-year-old who goes by age or A who is 4. Amanda has since fused, but she was 8. You know, they're not seeing these other parts show up. So they're like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, again, no disrespect, but I am saying this because I feel for you. I know how hard it is to live with one personality, you know, or one identity. It's hard. I can't even imagine. But the way that you can imagine just a touch, and you know, that's something we could talk about, is, you know, parts work. How sometimes we have, you know, they say that we could have a part that's childlike and that shows up because it's being reminded of something. That's a little bit how I can kind of feel into it, but I don't think that's the same.
Yeah. And really parts work in IFS, which is controversial when it comes to DID. The language can be somewhat helpful. The parts in IFS are going to be metaphorical. The parts in a dissociative system are going to be, you know, literal entities, you know, the dissociative amnesia where they have their own thought processes and things like that. So it is one way that people can try to connect with us. So I get that and I respect it. It's just that dissociative identity disorder is on the extreme end of that. Those parts are literally, you know, like their own people. And there are some people that live with DID and they get treatment. They refer to their parts as insiders or other people as part of a collective that they're working through one body. Mm-hmm. There are some people living with DID get upset when I say this, but I've had to do a lot of work to come to a place of acceptance and recognizing its brilliance. And that there are some talents that I have because of my parts that I can't access unless that part is around. So I have a 15-year-old part named Becky. She carries most of the depression. So when she's around, she's doing a lot of art. And it's very specific art. It's cartoon drawings. It's very sometimes perfectionistic. But I cannot sit down and do that art unless Becky is present. You know? So, and that part carries a lot of the depression. And when I would go to therapy, if I presented as more depressed, because the parts don't always identify themselves. So it's not like Becky would show up in therapy and go, "Hi, I'm Becky." It's Adrian looks really depressed today. We need to get her in to see somebody. And I used to argue with the therapist and say, "You want me to go on antidepressant medications because I have one part that's showing up that's depressed. The rest of us are not depressed. Therefore, I'm not taking the antidepressant medication because it's not going to work anyway."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So there's a lot of mixed information in the research because some people with DID will seek out treatment for anxiety or symptoms of depression, but it doesn't always work because not all parts are experiencing those symptoms.
So when we started, you were talking about that DID can come about. It would start early in life. And as a result, it is from usually extreme abuse. Is that always the case?
Typically, yes. Although there's going to be some people out there that disagree with me. But yes, from my understanding, it's a result of extreme. There are a lot of people that can develop PTSD with dissociation. But that does not mean they're going to meet criteria for DID or have separate parts or entities that are like other people in one body.
So let's talk now about training and about going to therapy, because I have a friend who has DID, and it's not easy to find a therapist that really knows how to work with them. What do you think? Could anybody work with DID? What is your feeling about therapy and therapists, and what do they need to be able to work with someone who has DID?
Yeah, well, I think there's a misconception that you have to be a DID specialist to treat DID. That's not true. You need to be a solid therapist that's really good with building rapport. You need to have a level of trauma-informed care, attachment theory, and you need to be able to be flexible with your therapeutic approach because not all parts are going to respond to the same approach. Like cognitive behavioral therapy may be listed in the research as a helpful tool. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to help very many people with DID. You need to be able to factor in things like music and art and movement and even things like equine therapy. And you can't be the therapist that's like, "My client can only see me," because you need to be able to make the referral to like equine therapy or dance movement therapy, because it's not a one size fits all approach, and different parts will never interact with the therapist unless they're given something that feels safe to them. So a lot of therapists think, "Oh, I'm trauma-informed. I can just maybe get trained in EMDR and then go out there and treat people with DID." Well, you're likely going to do a lot of harm. And then there's people that call themselves trauma-informed but say they don't need to have any knowledge of DID. So it's really messy out there in the therapeutic world. But what I need the therapists of the world to know is, as long as you're willing to understand attachment theory, you're willing to be flexible with your therapeutic approach, you have good boundaries and can build a solid rapport with your client, you can treat DID.
Well, let's talk about that. What do you mean by treat? What are you treating?
Well, right. Yeah. And I believe therapy should be a collaborative approach. So the old way of thinking is like, here's the symptoms and here's the diagnosis. Now here's a treatment plan. I laugh at that when people are saying, "We need a treatment plan for DID." Really? Okay, great. Then you should have one for every part. And you're likely not going to do that. And you're likely not going to document that in your notes. So treat just basically means, what is the goal? What is the client looking for? Is the client coming in and saying, I want to get to know my parts? Okay, well, then you start working on how they can better connect with themselves and how they can do some connection, you know, just getting to know themselves as a human, listening, journaling. Or is the client coming in and saying, "I'm having problems in my marriage. I need to figure out what's going on with my parts so I can better, you know, be there in my marriage." Clinicians have this idea that think, "I'm going to treat somebody with DID means I'm going to integrate all their parts and I'm going to get to know all their parts and I'm going to keep data on all their parts," and they become overwhelmed or fascinated, or sometimes too enmeshed, and that's not the right way to go. It's, what is the client seeking in therapy? You know, maybe they need distress tolerance skills. Maybe it's just that they're in an ongoing crisis and they need some help managing their stress and they need specific coping skills to deal with it. It's not always a DID as the presenting problem. It's the root of the trauma and the lack of coping skills or stress management that the person may have to deal with the trauma that's resurfacing. You know, somebody with DID might present with panic attacks and overwhelm or agoraphobia, and they're afraid to leave their home, and they might not even know they live with DID. It's getting at the root of the trauma, but being mindful that you also don't just dip in and start doing trauma work with your client either. You need that rapport. You need to understand attachment. You need to have things in your office that are going to be supportive and conducive to the environment. And what does the client want to do about trauma? And many of them living with DID are coming in with other symptoms and they have no idea yet that they've experienced trauma.
That's an important piece because I've heard this from people that I know that some of their memories of trauma have been repressed and they come up later in life. And so they may be coming to therapy because they have a symptom or they're depressed and the memories may come later.
Yeah. And that's really what happened to me. Like I had had fragments and pieces of these weird and unusual memories about my dad. And I was like, there's no way this could be true. Like, what is all of this? Right. And I had been drinking on and off most of my life, but I didn't have a problem with it. Maybe outside, you know, I would say it wasn't until my sister really had voiced a concern about it because I would get out of control at like weddings and things like that. But now I don't drink at all. And it's not that I claim full sobriety. Like I like a good mimosa here and there, but I don't have the desire to drink because I've worked on the trauma that was leading me to numb it all out. But most people with DID are coming in with other symptoms. They're coming in with panic attacks, struggles in relationships, addiction problems, you know, and it really it's the unresolved trauma that's driving those behaviors. And it's not all parts that have the same problem. So I had a 17-year-old part that was the one that was out of control with alcohol, but the high-functioning professional didn't even really go near alcohol at like professional events. So it's just, you know, you have to be mindful that even the parts can have their own struggles with mental health conditions and addictions and things like that.
So did the therapist part know that the 17-year-old was drinking?
No. Not really. It was kind of like this. There was a lot of denial. Like the person I was married to at the time would bring it up. Like, I'm really concerned that you tend to drink. And I'm like, what? Like there's because there's a disconnect. So if this part was coming out and drinking more than was necessary, the other parts of me didn't know yet.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, I had a really serious situation. So I talked earlier about having agreement from your parts or system agreement before you do things. And one of my dear friends was getting married in Connecticut at a place where terrible things had happened to me. And the parts were like, we really shouldn't go to this wedding. And I was like, how are we not going to go to the wedding? She's been our best friend for over 20 something years. You know, we're part of the wedding. We're in the wedding. They're like, yeah, but bad things happen there. I don't think it's going to go well. And I ignored the parts. And I was like, I got to go to this wedding. I'm in the wedding. What am I going to do? Looking back, I would have made different choices. So I go to the wedding and I got really, really sick. I got really intoxicated and I did not drink very much. I probably had maybe 4 or 5 cocktails over the course of, you know, an all day thing. And I got really, really sick and I was having all kinds of reactions. And what had happened was there was a younger part that was present when I was drinking. I mean, it was spiraled out of control and I got more sick than I would have gotten sick in like college or something, right? Like where it's like not acceptable, but it makes sense. So you're in college and you're off the rails. And I would very rarely ever reach out to a therapist. And I reached out to my therapist at the time going, I don't know what's happening, but something bad is happening. And she's like, well, basically you entered into an environment where horrific things have happened to you. The parts are activated. They already told you they didn't feel safe to go. You ended up drinking. So even if the adult made the choice to have a cocktail at the wedding, the younger parts were present. And if you give a think, she was like, think about it. If you give a child in real life alcohol, which you wouldn't do, it would become sick and intoxicated and overwhelmed and it would throw up and all the things. And she goes, that's what happened. You basically had younger parts more in the front. They didn't feel safe. You put alcohol in your system. It spiraled out all of your parts. And now you're sick. I mean, I even threw up driving. I mean, that's just not me. I was so, so unwell. I never asked my sister for help for anything. And I basically was staying with her and she was kind of like, are you okay? Like, do you need food? Like, do you need water? Like, what do you need? And it felt at the time like I was going to die. And if you think about it, if you give a baby alcohol, it's going to die. So it's literally an experience that you end up having these experiences that if you don't tend to the parts, you forget that you're multiple. And if you're not careful, like these things happen. And it's not just somebody going to a wedding and getting drunk and then having a hangover the next day. I mean, this was like a really, my whole body was having a visceral reaction. I really felt like I was going to die. My parts were really scared, all because I entered into an old hotel where terrible things happened and it unleashed a bunch of stuff in my unconscious while I was at this wedding. It was awful. And now I know, unless I have system agreement, I'm not going. So I do miss some things sometimes. Weddings, baby shower. It just depends on what's going on for the parts. If it's not safe for them to go, then I don't go. Mm-hmm. So I end up, unfortunately, disappointing a lot of people sometimes because they expect me to show up just like I would at, you know, a certain thing and I can't do it sometimes because it's safer for me not to do it.
I see that as just you're honoring, you're listening, you're honoring their voice, you're honoring what they need to feel safe by not going.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just one of the examples of the challenges is because you have to tend to so many different identities. And once you're aware of them, it's not like you can just wish them away.
Yeah. Yeah. You reminded me of someone that I know who something similar happened where she was so excited. She was on vacation and she was hiking and she loves hiking. But then she had a trigger because she was reminded of she passed a place. But again, it was in the subconscious. So it's like kind of like what you're saying. Her adult put together part wanted to go and thought it would be great and maybe didn't check in to some feelings or maybe wasn't aware of the feelings, but then she really got triggered or a part got triggered.
Yeah.
That's really challenging. So what I hear you saying is that it's so important to listen and have respect and connection with all of them. Do you spend time talking with them or is it only when they show up?
Yeah, it really depends. I would say in the beginning of my journey, I was definitely more regular about checking in with all the parts because I wanted to get it right and I wanted to do DID recovery right. There is no right way to do it. But I genuinely try to do a check-in, especially before making like a life-changing decision or something like that, to get a sense of where all the parts are and what do they need. Traveling or going to visit things or going to events, conferences, I have to usually get a check-in. Do we have an agreement? What do we need to pack? Because packing with DID is, we could do a whole podcast on packing for DID alone, you know, to get a sense of where everybody's at before I can proceed with something. I think the biggest frustrating thing for me is I don't always want to explain to friends or family why I'm doing or not doing something. And I just need a level of understanding that sometimes I'll show up and sometimes I won't. And if I do, awesome. And if I don't, I just need some grace and understanding that it's not about you. It's about something I'm dealing with my parts, and this is the decision we need to make at the time. And I've weeded out, I call it weeding the garden. It was since coming forward and stepping out publicly, you know, I was helping a lot of people and I was pretty much everyone's rock. Well, right now I'm kind of bunkered down, like kind of rebuilding myself and what I'm doing for my career. And I'm married to somebody now that has DID and it's about us right now. And I can give a little of myself, but I can't give all of myself. She comes first and my parts come first and the rest of the world and friends and family will need to wait because it's taken me so long to get to where I am today that I have to protect that energy. And I'm not available to everybody like I used to be, whether that was codependency or not having strong enough boundaries or whatever it is. But now it's like, nope, like it's about us now. I can factor other things in when I can, but that's how I'm going to stay alive. That's how my partner and I are going to stay alive. Because with DID, if you do not tend to the parts, you are at a greater risk for suicide. You just are. There are parts that just sometimes just want to die. You could have everything in the world, everything that you need, and they still want to die. And so if you don't tend to that, it can spiral out of control and it can get really dangerous for those of us living with it. You know, the media makes it look like, oh, we're dangerous and crazy and we're going to come after you. We are more likely to hurt ourselves than we are to hurt anybody else.
Wow. Just everything that you're saying, it's education for those who have a family member or know someone. It's education for those who might work with people, even validation for those who are experiencing this. So, so important. So, and I hear you, what you're saying about this phase that you're in your life right now, and it sounds like it's a really good place. You have done a lot of advocacy and sharing. I know you wrote a piece for you do write for Psychology Today. You still write for them?
I do. I haven't written a blog in a while. The editor-in-chief, who's my assigned editor, has been so lovely. You know, I think we had some repair stuff there, and then she really interviewed me, and she has a much better sense. And so she checks in from time to time to see if I'm going to post a blog, and I reassure her I will, you know, as I go through changes, and Mabel and I will write some stuff together. But yes, I write for Psychology Today. I put out some other articles, and I like doing that stuff. The other side that people don't see is the dark side of advocacy. So I don't know if you get that as being a podcast host, but when you live with DID, if you get triggered by something, it's not like, oh, it's just one trigger and you just move along. It's like, it's got to filter through all of the parts. So when you're in the public eye, as you might know, people will come after you for all kinds of things. I had people looking up friends, people I was associated with. If I had a friend who has an organization that they don't agree with, then they hate me for it. And I'm just like, this is who I am. My friends are my friends. What my friends do is their business and whatever, you know, that thing is. Stay away from me. Like, just let me use my voice and advocate on behalf of people with DID, but do not come after me with who my family is, my friends are. So anytime you use your voice, you're prone to criticism and all that. But that has been very difficult for some of my younger parts because they're like, why are we getting attacked for this? This has nothing to do with our advocacy piece. And I try to explain to them and teach them that, like, the more we use our voice, the more haters we're going to have. And haters are just part of the world. And maybe you're doing something good because you're pissing people off. I don't know, you know, but it has not been easy. So it will shut them down or make some other parts very angry and protective. And so it's been very difficult for me to be in the public eye speaking about what I'm speaking about, especially letting the parts just share. Because again, we have some people that are still expecting Dr. Adrienne Fletcher in a very professional blazer and her glasses, and this is how she should be, and educating us on trauma. Why the hell is she letting these other parts of herself show up, right? And putting music or graphics or whatever that the parts want to share. And I say, well, this is what DID is. So you either take all of me or you leave me all. But it's taken me a long time to get to that point, to not let other outside influences, you know, get in the way of my voice.
Well, that's a huge, huge, huge growth. The message that a lot of us got who've had trauma, of course, to different degrees, was, you know, close your voice, don't speak, no voice. So the fact that you are, you know, speaking, of course, your parts are going to be threatened. Isn't your podcast called Braving the Way?
Yeah, it was Braving the Way, and we're changing it to Trailblazing the Way because we've shifted away from the concept of brave and then somebody that inspired. A lot of that has really hurt the parts. And so we wanted to move away from that and give it a new, fresh, and we'll get back to podcasting. The parts are still not sure what they want to do. And then I think Mabel and I are going to do something totally separate from trauma and something about love, just to put more positive energy into the world.
Yeah, that sounds really, really good.
Yeah.
So here's a question just from curiosity. And that's, during the day, a regular day, do you move in and out of parts throughout the day?
I do, yeah. And I don't always catch it. I think Mabel probably sees it more than I do sometimes, because she'll be like, your energy just shifted. And then I'm like, oh, somebody got upset, you know, inside or something. And I can have, this is hard to talk about, but it's one of the realities. And I can have some pretty terrifying parts of my system that can be very intimidating and very cruel at times, depending on if my system feels under attack or under threat, or if there is an emotion being presented that the rest of the system can't manage. So, you know, it's a hard reality to admit that there are sides of me that I don't always love, that are not always kind, and to have my partner experience that is not okay. So right now in my healing, I have an aggressive, the way to describe her is she's like a teenage part that's just moody and does not want anyone near me and just thinks that I just need to live by myself forever so that nobody can hurt me, because she's just had it. This part has just had it in the last year with some deception by somebody close to us and then the loss of somebody else. And that this part is just like, everybody just needs to keep the fuck away from you, and I'm going to make sure they know it. And I'm like, well, that's not okay when we're in a partnership now. So you need to treat her with kindness, love, and respect. You know, what you do, I don't want you telling off everybody in the world, but like, we're not going to take it out on her. So right now in my recovery, I'm working on trying to fuse that part, because that part needed to exist for a long time, but it's really just getting in my way now.
Okay, so that you just mentioned something interesting, and that's the fusing.
Yeah. So it's a highly controversial topic. It makes people with DID very uncomfortable. It made me very uncomfortable when I first learned about it too, because I thought, how am I going to not ever be multiple? Like, that just doesn't seem, now that I know about all these parts, I can't imagine being a singleton, which is a person that doesn't live with DID. And then when I had my first fusion, I was like, holy shit, like, what is happening? And fusion is actually a sign of growth in a DID system, but it's literally like a part dying off. And I would not have had any idea what it was until I spoke with Annalyn McCord, who's a distant friend of mine, who's an actress who lives with DID, who spoke openly to me about her struggle with one part and how she didn't want it to go and how she called her therapist in a crisis. I think she shared it on my podcast too. But thank God Anna had shared that experience with me, because when I was experiencing it, I was like, oh my God, this is what Anna was talking about. And she didn't want that part to go, but then also recognized that that part didn't fuse. It was going to keep her from growing in life. And so now I'm more comfortable with the concept that some of my parts are going to fuse and that they're not needed in the same way that they were. So sometimes in a DID system, parts will change roles, meaning like maybe there's one part that takes care of the grocery shopping or whatever, and then other parts start contributing. So that part's not needed for those adult responsibilities. So it might go away. Some parts change roles and some parts go away completely. But some people with DID, that concept is terrifying because they don't want to lose any of their parts. I get that. I experienced my biggest fusion last week. Of Nancy, which was really the part that was Dr. Fletcher. She was the overachiever, the academic, the people pleaser, a level of denial. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. You know, could put on a good face for the camera. And that part basically fronted for about 20 years of my life. And what Nancy was really doing was trying to get me to safety and to establish a life so that I wouldn't have to worry, right? So she has all these achievements and all of these credentials. But when people talk to me today and they like refer to me as Dr. Fletcher, it's weird because it doesn't feel like it fits. Like, yes, I have the doctoral degree. My legal name is attached to this doctoral degree, but Nancy is the one who did all of the work. And so sometimes like it has been a struggle to sort of be for the rest of the parts to figure out who's the adult in the system, who's the professional, who's taking care of business consultation, who's doing the podcast, because Nancy was front and center for so long. She was no longer needed. And so since her fusion, life has been extra hard. It's been really, really hard.
Yes. So Nancy is the one that I saw some videos. I saw her do some talks. Was that?
Nancy is the one with the glasses. So anytime you see glasses, and the glasses have only been worn one time, and it was for a legal matter regarding like mediation for divorce. The glasses have only been worn one time since Nancy fused. The parts won't wear the glasses. So it's hard to explain to people. People are like, don't you need glasses? No, I was supposed to need them for like to see the board at school or for nighttime driving. And even Mabel will say, do you need your glasses? Like if we're going to be out or whatever. And I don't need them. They were very specific to Nancy. Nancy wore her glasses. Yeah.
So now if you're going to be doing conferences in the future, if you do, you might not. Are you going to, I guess you're going to come as you are now.
Well, I'm like lost with that. And I was actually just talking to Mabel about that because we have a photo shoot coming up and my person that helps me with business stuff. She was like, listen, for your website, I need a photo between the black hoodie, which is a different part, and the blazer that was Nancy. She goes, we got, you know, if you're going to speak and do consultation, like I need more photos. And the parts are like, it was funny because the parts are like, what, we can't wear our hoodie? Like Brene Brown wears like a jean jacket and her clogs. And I was like, well, you know, to kind of get back out there in the world, we need to like, you know, freshen up and like wear our button down shirts. And the parts are like, can't we just get a hoodie that says consultant? And I was like, I suppose we could, but like, maybe like, let's get our foot in the door a little longer, you know, before we do that. But I'm lost right now. My sense of style, like I basically wear hoodies and sweats right now because it's cold. And I'm like, I have to rediscover a professional within my DID system. And it's been hard and scary because people look at me and they're like, you can do anything. You are credentialed across the board. Like, what are you afraid of? And I'm like, I'm afraid of a lot of things that I had this part presenting for 20 years of my life that was the, you know, stellar student and class president and president of Scottsdale Psych Society. And I am so far removed from that world. It just doesn't feel like me anymore. Mm-hmm. I'll have old colleagues text me and the parts will look at the text and go, what are we supposed to say? Like, it's like it's this whole world doesn't exist in my world anymore. It's very strange. And there's a grief associated with it. It's been very frustrating and disheartening. And Mabel often reminds me, like, I wasn't going to be able to grow if Nancy didn't fuse. So it's forcing me to, like, face all these things that maybe I wasn't ready to look at. But yeah, I mean, it's no, and that's what we're talking about. These are identities. So Nancy basically died off. I've had to pick up the pieces and I'm still kind of lost. I'm still kind of lost. You know, where do I fit? What do I want to do? You know, parts have all these goals and aspirations, but I don't exactly know where I want to start.
You said somewhere in the conversation, this is a time for you and your growth. Mm-hmm. It's okay to figure out, you know, you've done so much and you're still discovering and it's all okay.
Yep. Yeah. And we love doing consultation, but I just want to be able to do my consultation as me, but people still expect a certain Dr. Fletcher. And I'm like, sorry, that's not, you're not getting that. You know, you get me as I am with all of my parts, and my parts are really going to inform the therapists and the professionals on how to do the right treatment with people with DID because they were there and they know what was helpful and not helpful.
So I won't ask you the question, what's next? Because we have to, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely focused on doing consulting and I'll do more speaking. The hard part about people living with DID, though, is that some parts want to hide. So it's like a constant negotiation about, you know, what we're going to do. They do love consultation because they get to contribute. They get to help other people's teenage parts. We offer a global DID mentorship program, which is my favorite thing. You know, that's for people living with DID where it's not therapy. It's just a place for their peers. We do 8 weeks of experiential activities to help them get more connected with their parts and to help them improve the quality of their life. Like, we do that and we love that. The rest of it, I don't know. I have business aspirations about investing and properties, and it's going to take me some time because I got to figure out who in the system is going to take on these different roles.
Yeah, I really appreciate that I'm seeing you at this time because I've learned so much, and all of us who are listening have learned so much. I think I was thinking that I was going to be meeting Nancy, who I had seen all the videos, and I want you to know that you present such a pleasure, and I've learned so much, and I love the way that you are. It's been a pleasure. Is there anything you want to say that we didn't cover? I don't want to leave anything.
Sure. Well, one, I just want to say thank you for recognizing that you thought you were going to get like more of the Nancy, and you're getting all of me today, really, in who I am and my element. And I really have my partner really to thank for that.
I really liked getting to know you here and getting to know your parts. And I tell them all, I appreciate them being here.
Thanks. Yeah. And you asked if there was one other thing I wanted to share. And I think it's more just for the general public to not be afraid of it. And to, if you have a loved one or family member with it, that you need to be mindful of your expectations, just like that. Like, you might be expecting a person to be a certain way, but they may have a lot going on with their parts. So the more education people can do by checking out An Infinite Mind, going to conferences, reading the right books on DID, which some are listed on An Infinite Mind's website, because we don't always want to be the ones doing the work to educate our friends and family. It gets exhausting. We just need some kind of basic level of understanding. My aunt has been amazing with that. You know, she holds space for all the parts. She can just listen. And then there is a book called The Girls Within, written by a therapist. Her name is Jill Frost. I'll be doing an Instagram Live with her. But that is really for the therapists that really want to understand DID at a deeper level. It is a complex condition. There's nothing to be afraid of for those that live with it. The one thing I always ask is just to be mindful, correct people when they make inappropriate jokes about multiple personalities, just simply inform them that it stems from trauma. It is a real thing, and it's now called DID. I mean, that's the best way to spread the ripple effect of breaking down some of the stigmas, is just for people to acknowledge they know somebody that lives with it. It's caused from trauma. It's nothing to be afraid of. Our lives are challenging, you know, and it's really the trauma that's the problem, not DID.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks again for having me and just for being able and willing to have more of an authentic conversation that's less rigid and professional, as we call it, and more just the realities of what we're dealing with.
Thank you.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.